You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's at TicketKing.com.
It is good! The Packers are moving on! Aaron Rodgers has done it again! And Mason Crosby, a hero for Green Bay!
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the island. Get those
back. So I think that's the logical explanation.
Let's just, you know, say that didn't happen.
It was a return to greatness. It was a return to form.
It's crazy. And he just kind of flew under the radar.
Get this out there so I sound good on Cheesehead Radio.
Yeah.
No negativity allowed, sir.
So I think that's actually going to be really exciting to watch. I don't think there's anything positive we can say. There's a lot.
Oh, you were looking for positive.
Yeah. I guess that's what I meant. Positive, I think.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Cheesehead Radio. Your hosts tonight are the humorsome C.D. and Julie of PackersTalk.com and Cheesehead TV, the glowing Jamie Snowden of Cheesehead TV, and me, little old Jersey Al of PackersTalk and CheeseheadTV.com. Our other host, Michelle Bruton, is not available this evening, so she will join us next week. And tonight, we have a special guest. We have with us tonight, Pete Daugherty of the PackersNews.com. We'll be talking to him about the Packers shortly. As always, sponsoring the Packers Talk Network this year are the wonderful people over at Ticket King. They've been selling Packers, Badgers, and other tickets in Wisconsin for over 25 years. They have a great reputation for good prices and excellent customer service. Be sure to check out their website, theticketking.com. So, and now that we've got all the preliminaries out of the way, let's get started with some Packers news.
Packers news.
Well, if you missed the game on Sunday night, you missed an Alcoa fantastic finish and a clinic of passing accuracy by Aaron Rodgers. But more notably, two brand new names were added to the primetime list of players making an impact. Josh Jones, the rookie cornerback, led the defense in tackles, sacks, and hurries. And one particular sack led to a missed field goal that ended up being the difference between going to overtime or not. And then there was Geronimo Allison, the wide receiver who caught the 72-yard pass in overtime that led to the game-winning field goal, after beating Pac-Man Jones for the catch and then breaking his ankles twice on the way downfield.
But all that glory comes at a cost, and the Packers have listed both David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga as doubtful for Thursday night's game against the Bears. Now, without both starting tackles in the game, mind you, all three backup tackles on injured reserve, namely Murphy, Spriggs, and Barclay, the Packers will either look to move a young guard or two to the outside, or perhaps give a start to Ulrich John, just signed off the Cardinals practice squad.
The Packers signed another player this week, Tabor Pepper, to replace long snapper Brett Good, who was placed on injured reserve after popping a hamstring in Sunday's game. While Pepper may not remind you of Kurt Warner, they do have something in common. On Sunday, while the Packers were gutting out an overtime win, Pepper was running the cash register for his parents' consignment store in Champaign, Illinois. Pepper spent a few weeks with the Packers in training camp, so welcome back.
Now, overshadowing much of the action in the NFL this past weekend, at least if you pay attention to social media, was the wave of peaceful protest actions by players in response to criticism from the President Donald Trump. Now, the protests, which are being done to call attention to racial relations in the United States, saw Martellus Bennett, Lance Kendricks, and Josh Jones sit on the sidelines during the national anthem on Sunday. But like many other teams, the rest of the Packers linked arms as a show of unity during the anthem.
And Aaron Rodgers, when asked about the acts of protest on Tuesday, took it a step further by asking that fans join in and lock arms on Thursday night when the Packers play the Bears. Said Rodgers, "This is about equality. This is about unity and love and growing together as a society and starting a conversation about something that may be a bit uncomfortable for people. But we've got to come together and talk about these things and grow as a community, as a connected group of individuals in our society."
Cool. Well, If a narrow overtime loss to the winless Bengals isn't enough to make you sweat, the Packers face their longtime rival Chicago Thursday night. Now, the Bears aren't lighting the world on fire, sitting at fourth place in the NFC Central at 1-2, and the Packers have won 10 of the last 12 against the Bears. However, Bears wins have come in Lambeau Field during primetime games. Nervous? Who's nervous?
That stated, even though the longest rivalry in the NFL has been awfully one-sided over the last few decades, it stands right now at the most even it has been in a long, long time. Not only is the Packers-Bears series tied at 94-94 in six tie games, there are two teams are just 4 points apart after 194 games. The Packers edging out the Bears with 3,335 points to 3,331. How's that for an even series over 96 memorable years?
Wow. And finally, if you watch The Voice on NBC, you might have seen a somewhat familiar face. Former Packer Esra Tuolo appeared during the blind auditions, belting out his rendition of Andre Day's Rise Up, and then selected Blake Shelton as his coach. Now, having never seen the show, I have no idea what this means, but Tuolo spent a year and a half with the team after being drafted in 1991 when he was named to the NFL All-Rookie Team as a nose tackle.
And that was your Packers News of the Week. Now it's time for your...
Packer Tweets from Packer Tweets.
Our friends over at the Power Sweep have kept us up on the state of the Packers this week, but also found a great little gem on our newest favorite target for number 12. Geronimo Allison has 15 career catches. Only one hasn't gone for a first down or a touchdown.
And our old friend, the Packer Anter, helps keep the Bears rivalry alive, as if it needs any help, with a yearly announcement, annual tweet, and still true, Bears eat garbage.
Alas, the Green Bay Packers head into Thursday night with their color rush uniform, widely panned for their all-white design. Who would be the pile on the criticism other than ask Packer Trump, who said, "Whoever designed the Packers' disgusting color rush uniforms is a total moron. All white, so can't be color rush. Very ugly."
And finally, as we mentioned in the news, Rodgers spoke out regarding the anthem protests, which naturally got some interesting yet predictable replies on Twitter. This last example is actually an exchange between four people, so try to follow along here. So first, in response to Rodgers' tweet, we hear from a Nick Wilson underscore WISC, for, I guess, for Wisconsin. And he says to Rodgers, "And this is why I always love Brett Favre." Quickly replying was Brandon Glass from at the Blue Bandit, who corrected Nick on the spelling of Brett's first name with the correct spelling with two T's. That was quickly followed by a Jason E. Alexander, who also corrected Nick, this time on the spelling of Favre's last name, with the correct order of the V and the R. Third person jumps in and comments, "This guy seriously said he likes Brett Favre more and spelt both his names wrong." To that, James Alexander came back in again and said, "I mean, that kind of irony has to be appreciated."
And we do appreciate that kind of irony and all the hard work that Al just put into reading all those tweets. So that is your Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
Damn you, Angeli. That was not easy.
But you did it. Packers on Sunday night. Sunday.
You pulled it out in overtime, Al. Nicely done.
It wasn't easy, but we did it, yes. How nerve-wracking was that game?
Oh, man.
I thought I was
going to
early labor.
There was a feeling of dread. There was like this feeling of dread the whole game. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you got done with that first half. You're like, oh, my gosh. It's, you know, here it is. We're playing the worst team in the league. And we're losing at halftime. This is absolutely, it's typical. It's almost like early season McCarthy capers, and you're just kind of like, am I even going to watch the rest of the game? And I'm sure there are some people who turned it off and said, I'm going to go mow my lawn, and they missed out on one heck of an ending, didn't they?
Sure did.
Yes. I mean, I didn't turn it off, but I definitely had that foreboding negative feeling wash over me. There's not a whole lot of ball games left being said in my house just because it just feels kind of typical. Those are the games the Packers lose. The playing somebody who shouldn't be as good of a team as you, but it's the team that Aaron Rodgers has never beaten. I live in Cincinnati now. I feel like I'm used to watching them. Like, I went to the last games, all the preseason games they have here. They always lose. Even the Brewers come and play the Reds. I know they're going to lose. Like, that's just what happens. And so it just felt like surprising to actually see not only a comeback, but then an overtime win.
Yeah, I was hanging in there pretty good in the first half. Still optimistic, I guess, until the last possession, because I'm like, okay, well, if they score on this possession, then they get the ball at the half, we'll do a double dip, and boom, we're on our way back to winning this game. And then they didn't do anything with the last possession of the first half. So then I spent a depressing 15 minutes during the half wondering if I should be depressed or if I should still be optimistic or not. But eventually I pulled myself together and I said, you know what, they can still win this game. But I didn't quite expect it to be as dramatic as they made it.
Well, I actually had to DVR the game. I was an hour late starting the game. So I got the DVR and I'm fast-forwarding through commercials and, you know, sometimes between plays to get caught up. And by the time I got caught up, it was actually the start of the fourth quarter. And I went on Twitter and I said, okay, I'm finally caught up. I said, I'm glad I'm watching it live with you guys. And someone comments this, you really could have just skipped the first half altogether. I said, yeah, you're probably right. After I sat through that, I just should have turned it on live and watched it with everyone else. It would have been a lot better. But it was an amazing
Your blood pressure would have been...
It probably would have. But, you know, I think it just goes to show once again that these are the Green Bay Packers. They're not a dominant team, but they have these wonderful moments of dominance. They have these wonderful moments of, we can go out and just work magic out there. And you're just like, this is great. If you could do this for four quarters, we'd be thrilled. And if we could do this for all 16 games, we'd be thrilled. But it's just that inconsistency that makes you go against a team like the Bengals and have to fight for your life to win the game. And, you know, maybe you're going to go against a great team, you know, a better team like Seattle, and you win convincingly. It's like, well, what's up with that?
Well, and I think that that's just kind of also what is the start of the season. Like, I don't feel like I know this team at all. When I was trying to think of my prediction for that we'll get to later, and I'm like, I don't know. Because you look at the Seattle game, which, yes, that was a weaker offensive line on Seattle, but our defense looked much better. And not just in their ability to stuff the box and stop the run and get pressure on Wilson, but just the way that they attacked the ball versus, I'm not sure if anyone showed up in Atlanta, versus being able to come back and grind out a victory last week. And I'm just like, I don't know what we're going to be good at this week and what we're going to be bad at tomorrow. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just doing the Cheesehead TV predictions post, you know, and where I put together all the writers' predictions, and I got down to mine, and I pretty much had the exact same thought that you just had, was, well, where do I go with this? I could see them winning. I could see them losing, you know, because it's impossible based on the three games that we've seen to know who this team is at this point. So I get you 100%. I am curious, Jamie, since you do live in Cincinnati, what was it like this week in Cincinnati? What were the Bengals fans' reactions to losing this game in overtime?
Honestly, and this probably speaks a lot about the state of Bengals football, not a lot of people talked about it.
Interesting.
And I think some of that just might be because of all the other drama and storylines that went around, but I think they're just ready to be done with the season already.
Okay, well, I guess we're done with this topic, so I think it might be time to segue here.
Cheesehead Radio special guest.
You've checked out PackersNews.com. You know this name if you're a subscriber to the Green Bay Press Gazette, as I've been for eons. Pete Doherty, the Green Bay Press Gazette Packers News, joins us tonight. Pete, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's been a little while.
Absolutely. Way too long. We'll try not to have that long of a lapse between your appearances again. Hey, Pete, get us up to date right now. I mean, obviously, a great win and a lot of excitement in Packertown. But what's going on with this injury thing? We got a lot of key injured players going on. Who's out and who are you expecting to play tomorrow night?
So I'm trying to remember the injury report. I've been working on something else today, but I know, you know, I thought after looking at the injury report the previous 2 days, I thought, maybe Bakhtiari's going to play this week because he was limited in practice both days. You know, that's what they list him as. I'm not sure they actually did very much, if anything. But today both he and Bulaga are doubtful. So they're not playing. So that's a big blow. That makes things a lot tougher. The one thing I'll say, I mean, you're right, because they have been hit hard by injuries. And the big thing is, it's been good players. You know, they're starting right tackles. They're starting tackles. Mike Daniels, their best defensive player. Nick Perry, who's, you know, probably their best rusher. So these are good players. But the one thing I'll say is, they still haven't been hit losing a good player to a season ender. And those are the real killer injuries. Like, these injuries will pass. If all those guys don't play this week, you know, there's probably a decent chance they're back for the following game, you know, especially with kind of the mini bye this weekend. So as long as they don't get those long-term, you know, 10-week or season-ending injuries, I'd still say they're doing okay on the injury front, even though they are getting killed at tackle right now. There's no getting around that.
All right, and any other players on that list that, I mean, obviously those are the two biggies, but what else are concerning?
Daniels.
Yeah, Daniels, was he, I can't remember if he was, I think it was questionable. Questionable.
Yeah, he's questionable, yeah.
Those things, that, you know, what do those things even mean anymore? I mean, I think if that means it could, he has anywhere from a 99% chance of playing, if I understand that right, so who knows. I think his house, what was his designation, was he out again?
He's
I think
out.
He might have been
out. Yeah, he's out.
Yeah.
Perry is questionable.
Yeah, so I,
that's,
you know,
it. Everybody else is in and playing that was on the injury list. Bryce,
yeah,
Cobb, Dial, and Montgomery.
Yeah, and Cobb, you know, getting him back will help. Although, you know, I'm not convinced they missed Cobb that much last week. You know, I mean, obviously, Geronimo Allison had a good game. And while he's not as dynamic and quick as Cobb is, he is a really big target. You know, and they can put some big receivers and tight ends out there. And they might not run by you, but they can just, you know, throw it over your head and catch it and get first downs that way and keep the chains moving. So, I think they're still okay regardless of whether Cobb plays, because Allison's a pretty decent player.
Okay, Pete, you've covered the Packers for many years, and you kind of touched on this in that follow-up to Steve's question, but have you ever seen one position get so decimated by injuries as we have with the offensive tackles?
Yeah, so I go back to 93. Now, not that I can remember everything that happened between then and now, but that's that's how many seasons I've been covering. Probably not. This is really good. I mean, when you're getting to the point where you're picking guys up off the street who might start for you, or, you know, off somebody's practice squad who might start for you, that's getting that's going, you know, pretty far down the depth chart, because they've already promoted guys to the practice squad and everything. So, probably not. I do remember, you know, actually the year they won the Super Bowl, I think they got hit pretty hard at inside linebacker, but that happened to be their deepest position, so they came out of it okay. But, yeah, I just kind of my gut feeling without having looked through the rosters of all the seasons and the games played and all that, I'd be hard-pressed to remember anything as bad as what's happened at tackle this year. And it's, that hurts them, especially because that's the strength, you know, one of the strengths of their team. That's where a lot of their money is. That's the strength of their offensive line. That has hurt them and makes things tougher. But, you know, this is the NFL, and everybody gets crushed by injuries at some point or another during the season.
Okay, Pete. I'm sorry. For most of the game last week, the Packers defense played with four safeties on the field. Do you think this is going to be the new normal, or do they move away from that this week against the Bears, who tend to run the ball better than they pass it?
Yeah, good question. I'm inclined to guess, speculate, think that this is the new normal. You know, a lot of it is getting your best guys in the field, and several of their better guys are safeties. It's their deepest position. So I'm judging a little bit from what Capers said this week, you know, when he met with the media, he basically made it sound like, you know, he thinks they can stop the run. You know, those are two safeties playing there. It's not two cornerbacks. So even though they're not as big as linebackers, they're not small guys. Jones is a 220-pound guy. He's not that much smaller than Joe Thomas, 7 or 8 pounds, I think. Right. So I think that's probably the new normal. Now, you never know. They also have that I don't think they've played it yet, but they've showed it. They showed it in camp. It's they called it Sooner Package, I think. So if things get really tough against the run, it's their base defense, but that if they play Burnett or it could be Jones as one of the inside linebackers. So it's a 3-4, which they don't play very often. So they have three defensive linemen on the field, and then the two outside linebackers on the outside, and then there's two inside linebackers. And instead of having, like Ryan and Martinez doing that, they'll take one of those two guys out and put Burnett or Jones there. So at least they're a little better in coverage. But I don't know what you guys think, but you watch the team, you know as much as I do. My best guess is that, you know, they really like that nitro package. They like what Jones and Burnett give them athletically, playing in the front seven. And so my guess is that's basically their primary defense from here on out.
Yeah, you know, it's funny what you just described as the Sooner package. I thought that was going to be what they were aiming for at the beginning of the season. You know, I thought in camp, I thought that's what they were going to be looking at. And then along came the nitro package, and they went full force with the safeties. So it's interesting. I don't know that I've seen that yet either, where they mix in one real linebacker and one safety in the base 3-4. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they haven't used it in the games yet, but they did show it fairly regularly in training camp practice, you know, for at least a couple snaps here and there.
Yeah. Okay. Jamie?
Okay, well, kind of staying on that same topic, Al and I were talking right before CB brought you on about how it's been difficult to kind of come up with a personality for the Packers team after these three vastly different games so far. In particular, the Packers defense. I feel from a fan perspective, the season opener gave us all this, like, glimmer of hope. They're swarming the ball. They're stopping the run. They're being shut down. And then they face Atlanta and the Bengals, and Atlanta's definitely more passing, and even the Bengals with A.J. Green. And it just felt like they couldn't cover the middle again, keep up with tackles. And so, you know, we look at Thursday night's game. They're playing the Bears offense. It's definitely more run than pass-focused, you know, with Lennon back there. And the possibility of maybe Perry and Daniels back. What kind of showing do you think that maybe we can expect from the Packers defense Thursday night? Will it be a whole brand new one, or will we maybe go back to the glimmer of hope that was the Seattle game?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Atlanta's really talented, and they've run them off the field twice now in 8 months. I don't know what feeling you guys had, but watching that game, I kind of felt like Atlanta would have scored as many points that needed to win the game. You know, they kind of took the foot off the gas there in the second half. So I think that's still a really tough matchup for them. Against lesser teams, you know, and this will be a work in progress. I think they have to figure out who can do what. You know, if Montravius Adams can add a little inside pass rush as the season goes on, that would help them. But I thought last week, I think the Bengals aren't that bad, even though they're 0-3. And I know Dalton's not, you know, one of the top quarterbacks. But A.J. Green's a premier player. Those running backs were good. And Dalton's, you know, I mean, he's okay, and he played a better game this week, so the last week. So, you know, Jones made a difference. And as he learns the defense, as they get better, as Capers gets better figuring out what blitzes work and all those things, you know, you're right, because I think they're going to learn their identity as the season goes on. I don't think you're right that they don't have it yet. It sure looks to me like they're going to end up being a better defense than last year. But I'm still like you. I'm just not sure, will it be enough to slow down, to get off the field a few times in the first half against the Falcons so you're not giving up, you know, 24 points in the first half. Or if you're playing the Patriots, can you get enough stops? Still not sure about that, but they definitely should be better on defense. You know, Jones just by himself makes a difference. I think Kenny King sure looks like a pretty good prospect to me. I suspect he'll keep improving as the season goes on. I know Green had a lot of catches. And, you know, a bunch for that in that 12 to 16-yard, 18-yard range. But all in all, you know, I think King is probably still their best cover guy. So I would say, you know, if you're a fan, if I were a fan, I'd be, you know, reasonably encouraged. But I'd still be, you know, you'd still have to be worried about Atlanta because they haven't shown any ability to slow that team down.
I like that. Reasonably encouraged. I like that a lot. Thanks. Al?
Yeah, Pete, great call by you after the Atlanta game. You immediately said the Packers have to find a way to get Josh Jones onto the field. They obviously did that against the Bengals, and while there may have been a few early hiccups, he ended up as their leading tackler and was a big part of the Packers' defense shutting down the Bengals in the second half. You'd have to think he gets starters reps from here on out, right?
I can't imagine. I mean, he was their best guy on the defensive side of the ball in that game. So,
yeah.
You know, looking back, I mean, they knew that he was eventually going to get on the field sometime or other this year. I kind of wonder, looking back, if they probably made a mistake. And when they brought him in, you know, because you don't want to overload a rookie. There's so much to learn, and the defenses are so much more complex, and the offenses are more complex. So there's a lot to learn for rookies. I wonder if they should have just basically played him only at the nitro and linebacker positions and not messed around with him at safety very much, if at all. Let him play that position because that's a team that's just – their defense is lacking dynamic players, and he's maybe their most dynamic guy. So I think that he probably – if they had handled that differently, he could have been starting from week one in that role. But, yeah, long story short, I can't imagine them taking him off the field. I mean, he's as good as they have, at least talent-wise. You're right, he's going to make some mistakes. But, I mean, look at those two sacks and that third down tackle, you know. But that third down tackle on the – yeah, that's the exact play that last year, game after game on third downs, they would have missed that tackle, and the drive would have been kept alive and more points would have been put up. I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing games is getting those third down stops like that.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Jamie?
Okay, Pete. I have a question about what's going on with the running game on the offense. I mean, we've got Montgomery, and then we've got, you know, the backs behind him, but they only had Williams in for 4 snaps, I think it was, on Sunday, and only 1 attempt. What can you tell us about the running game? Did we just have to get, you know, abandon it on Sunday, or is it really going to just be Ty Montgomery from this?
Yeah, that's kind of the way, you know, the coach and many coaches, play callers in this league are. When it doesn't work early, they just dump it, especially if you have a good quarterback. But if they're going to keep that guy upright all year and keep him off the, you know, the injury list, they need to run the ball better. And, you know, I mean, Montgomery, you know, I think everybody, we all kind of assume, you know, many observers assume that he'd be a little better running back this year than last year, because he'd be more experienced. But I think so far it's kind of gone the other way, in that it almost looks like he's thinking too much and not just playing on instinct. And, you know, that's a position. He's had too many snaps. I mean, he's not a guy you want out there for 90% of the snaps. I mean, the only guys you want to do that with are the Le'Veon Bells of the world and Ezekiel Elliott, guys like that. I think they need to figure out which of these three rookies – is their best runner of that group and see if he can add a little juice to it. And I think the only way you can tell is you have to give him carries in the games. And, you know, I work a lot with Eric Baranchek. You know, we do the video, you know, tale of the tape kind of story the day after the game. And I know he thinks Mays is probably the most talented runner of the group, but that Williams is the best protector. And I'm sure that's why Williams is playing even the handful of snaps, whereas Mays hasn't played at all. But, I would think at least both of those guys, I would think they'd want to get those guys a few carries just to see if they can add a little something different to the offense and improve the run game. I know they worry a lot about the pass game and picking up blitzes and the audibles, you know, the check with knee calls where Rodgers could go run or pass. You know, and that gets a little dicier when you have the rookie out there. But, you know, with the way they've been running the ball, I think they need to take that chance and find out if one of those two guys can do so.
Okay, thanks. Al?
All right, Pete, I have one last question for you. I have to admit I was fairly thrilled this offseason when the Packers signed an actual name free agent in Martellus Bennett. But while it's just 3 games, he kind of has me longing to have Jared Cook back. And it's not even the drops, right? He doesn't have a history of drops, so that's likely just an aberration. His blocking has been fine, but I haven't been thrilled with his effort running routes, and he doesn't seem to know what to do in the scramble drill. He just kind of jogs around watching Rodgers rather than looking for an open spot on the field, to my eyes. I'm curious, have you noticed anything like this?
You know, it's funny, Al. I did a chat yesterday, and I had several people ask that, and I hadn't had time to rewatch the game yet. So I was going off the first two games, and I really liked his blocking in the first couple games, and I can't say that I noticed anything about his effort that jumped out at me. You know, he's a real, especially if you've been to camp, you notice this really, really early. He's a laconic guy, like between plays, you know, a lot of guys, you know, sprint back or run back really hard. If, like, say they catch a pass and go 30 or 40 yards downfield, then they'll turn and they'll run fairly hard on the way back. And he moseys, you know, he takes his time. He's not what you'd call, you know, an all-out hustle guy all practice. But then I rewatched the game last night, and I saw what you saw. And I saw a few snaps where the effort wasn't the greatest, and, you know, a couple of scramble drills where he did seem a little unsure, and there was a lot of snaps where he looked fine too, but I see what you're saying, and, you know, the thing is, he's not as fast as Jared Cook was. I mean, that is so blatantly obvious, and that's taken away some of the dynamism from the offense, so they're missing that. So he's got to, he can't have four drops in 1 week and another one the next week. He's got to catch everything if he's going to help this offense, but I think he could use a little more juice in his step, and I still get the sense, I mean, you get the feeling his teammates really like him. I get the feeling Rodgers likes him, and Rodgers is going to keep going to him, at least for now. But, you know, the Packers paid for a guy to play at a fairly high level, and he hasn't done that for 3 weeks, except for the blocking the first couple of weeks. It's pretty good.
Agreed. All right. Well, Pete, we want to thank you very much. You certainly are never at any shortage of a little fire in your step, certainly. We appreciate you being on point tonight and coming on Cheesehead Radio once again.
Hey,
thanks
for having me, guys. It's always real fun to talk with you, and I follow you guys' work, and you guys do a great job, so thanks for having me.
Appreciate that, Pete. Thanks for your time.
All right. Have a good night, Pete.
Okay, see you guys.
All right, see you later. Pete Doherty, great guy.
Always great talking to Pete. Yep.
Absolutely.
The Playbook.
Bet you guys forgot we had that sting, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you both jump when that happened? Because I knew it was coming, and I still jumped when I heard it. Okay. Anyway, this is the Playbook. We're just going to run through a couple of different topics, a couple of different things that are just going on. First of all, I just got to throw this out there because I was just absolutely thrilled at listening to Tony Romo, and I did not have really high expectations for Tony Romo, but he may be, at this point, the greatest of all time color commentator. I mean, you might have John Madden, and I don't know. Tony Romo he was just fun to listen to. I don't know what you guys thought, but I was, just to hear a guy with that kind of, cause, you know, he's from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yes, they mentioned that a couple of times.
Yes, so you could hear this Wisconsin lilt in its voice, and you know, a lot of other people from Wisconsin who, why is it? Yeah, Yahe, and you could just kind of hear just the clumsy speech that I think comes with the Midwestern accent, and it was very comfortable to listen to. But what I loved was his willingness to really talk about. Not just what was happening, and he used some of the intricate turns, you know, just using the RPO, the run-pass option. He kept talking about that and predicting it, but saying, you know, well, you know, they would ask him, why do you think that's happening? And he'd just kind of say, well, you just kind of see where that safety's playing up there, and it just seems what you're going to do. And it's like, I felt like I was learning something, and I'm a smart guy. So I can look at stuff and understand most of it, but when he's showing me stuff, just shifting the center over to the left, I'm like, oh my gosh, he did it! Oh my gosh, that was so cool. I would have never noticed that, you know, unless maybe, you know, someone would point it out to me on game film later. But he did it in the moment, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. So I don't know. I'm hoping they never dumb him down. I don't know if they take these guys to some dumb color commentator camp and say, you know, keep everything at a third grade level or lower or something like that. But for me to sit there and have someone that bright and that observant and able to share that was really cool for me.
Boy, you are gushing.
I am.
Down like gushing. I've never heard you like this. Wow.
So positive.
You know?
while we haven't gotten to game predictions.
my take... Oh, ahead, Jamie.
You go.
Okay,
well, I definitely, I enjoyed listening to Tony Romo. I had heard a lot on Twitter, you know, in the first couple of weeks. I'd seen people commenting who weren't Packers fans for watching other games and going, really enjoying Tony Romo, really enjoying Tony Romo. And I'm like, really? And I didn't tune into the games that they were watching, so I didn't get a chance to listen. But I was just like, a lot of people seem to be enjoying this, and I just don't think I will. Like, I just, there's something about the Cowboys aspect of it that in just my head I was like, not going to be a fan of. And so I was watching the game on Sunday with my husband, who is a Washington fan. So he also is a does not like Dallas. It's a, you know, similar hatred. And so my husband thought Tony Romo was just ridiculous the entire time. I, however, was loving it. And for the same reason that CD was, because I felt like, I love these, like, they could run or pass here, but they're going to run on this one because of this. And he would say it before the snap, and then they would do exactly what he said. And I was like, I felt like I was learning so much, but not in that, you know, kind of talking down to her annoying way. And I also just really liked it was all about football. There wasn't any conversations about when McCarthy shaved his beard and if his wife liked it or, you know, just the other stuff that seemed to cloud up so much of what passes for color commentary and things that people care about. And I just really appreciated that. And then I do hope that they don't dumb him down so we get things like the people who score the most points will win the game. You know, those kind of statements that I feel like Madden was really good at. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think if you are a fan of football talk, you know, if you're a football nerd or geek and you just love that stuff, he is your guy. I mean, like you, I had never heard him before, but I had heard compliments about him from other people. So I was kind of anxious to see what it would be like. And certainly compared to another former Cowboy who's an announcer, Troy Aikman, I mean, Romo's a godsend compared to Aikman. I mean, he's a godsend. So I sincerely hope we get to hear him a lot more. I think he's doing they are doing the game tomorrow night, correct?
I believe so.
They're not.
They were talking on the broadcast about Romo staying in Wisconsin because they have, you know, this other game coming up Thursday night.
Yeah, and I don't think Tirico does both games. I think Tirico does one. I think Tirico does the Sunday night, and then Romo does the Thursday night. But I remember what Al was saying. It was like, he can run down to Burlington, which is between Milwaukee and Chicago, which we learned on the broadcast a couple of times. Said he'll be able to go see family and then pop back up.
Yep, that's what I remember. So that'll be good.
Yes.
That will.
But I also, you're referring to him as a godsend. CD is gushing over there. I mean, this might be the most positive we've all been on this show, and ironically, over an ex-Cowboys quarterback.
That's very ironic. Although, fortunately, he's not an ex-Cowboys quarterback that has really hurt us much over the years, like the other one has.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a little easier to take. If Aikman was this good, I think we'd all have a real problem.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever be okay with that, because I'll just go, the 90s.
Yeah.
Playoffs in the 90s.
But it is kind of a statement, if you think about it, just on, I guess, the general quality of prognosticators that we have, that, you know, how many times do you hear someone say, well, I'm shutting it off and I'm going to listen to, Wayne Larrabee, and, you know, I'd rather listen to it on the radio with a 3-second delay or something than actually listen to whoever's on it. You know, who's a guy who I enjoyed listening to that I'm sure everyone will say I'm crazy for wanting to do it, but Jerry Glanville, when he used to announce. Do you guys remember him?
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And he got kind of annoying at the end, but at the beginning, he was doing the same thing. He would announce, and he'd use all these I never heard the term trips before. And I was like, I mean, we all hear it nowadays, but that was the first time I heard it. I said, they call it trips. Well, that's kind of cool, because there's three receivers. I get it. You know, it was just this – you felt, you know, what was it, my 20s or something like that, early 20s, like, oh my gosh, I feel so much smarter now. And I appreciate that type of announcing. And you would think from Jerry Glanville now to Tony Romo, who have we had that has really been that kind of intelligent I'm going to teach you something while we're doing this kind of prognosticator. So there's got to be some sort of dumbing down school that they go to, or else they're just dumb when they come in. I don't know. All right. Well, I guess we'll just broach it, and if we feel like it gets a little too fiery, we'll just edit it out later, because I can do that. But you know, obviously it's not a hot pocket. This is the hot potato controversy, and you know, just kind of reading a little bit about how obviously we know last week with the whole players choosing not to participate or to participate differently in the national anthem and a backlash that is occurring. I really had a lot of respect for how Aaron addressed it yesterday and his efforts to try to bring some of the conversation back to where it's supposed to be. Because I think sometimes when you get into these types of political battles, you lose the message, which was, hey, we're supposed to be talking about this difficult conversation that no one wants to talk about, which is the original reason why the kneeling and why the non-participation took place. And it's kind of ballooned into a whole bunch of other things that aren't necessarily accurate. And sometimes you even have some players who aren't necessarily saying, well, this is why we're doing it. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick was drawing attention to racial relations in America, but now you're going to get in this, well, we're doing it because, you know, we're all together and we're all unified and we have a freedom of speech. And I said, yeah, you do. But, you know, Aaron was trying to bring it back to that point. So I thought that was it was respectful. I respect that from him. But his request now to have all the fans join arms is really putting Lambeau Field under a Thursday night microscope, because it's kind of as the controversy has rolled since Sunday, this will be like the first game where, you know, I think you have that. And you've had some fans who've said, you know, I don't want to participate. You're seeing fans across the nation who are burning jerseys and burning their tickets and all these other things. Your thoughts, I guess, a little bit on some of this backlash and maybe how that's going to impact the game tomorrow night.
I'll go first, I guess. As far as I love the whole idea of the linking arms in an attempt to show unity. I think that's a wonderful way to approach it. I mean, I'm not in favor of kneeling or sitting down for the national anthem. While I understand the reasons they were doing it and what they were trying to accomplish in terms of getting a message and calling attention to the message that they have, I'm not personally a fan of doing that. I'll always stand for the anthem, but I love the idea of linking arms, you know, showing unity. We're all one. We're all in this together. I think that's where you start with this type of issue. And like you said, I applaud Rogers for attempting to do that. I'm totally flabbergasted by all the hate he's getting for it, as if God knows what he's suggested, such an awful thing. But I suppose I shouldn't be flabbergasted at this point. I shouldn't be surprised. So in any case, that kind of boils it down for me. I think it's a wonderful idea to have everybody link arms during the anthem and show unity together.
I'm going to kind of just follow up with what Al's saying on the idea of the unity and Roger's message kind of getting back to, I think that we all can kind of support that and it's boiling down back to the heat of the matter. You know, anyone who follows me on Twitter knows I have very strong opinions on it. But I think for this part, I'd rather focus on something I've learned over the last year. I was part of this pilot program in Cincinnati that the Chamber of Commerce put on to try to, it was building cultural competency for leaders among the city of Cincinnati. And very intense, multi-week, we had a lot of seminars and a lot of meetings and learned a lot. And one of the things that I really took away from the seminar wasn't necessarily how to be a more diverse person myself, but, you know, or how like, oh, well, now I appreciate you because I know X, Y about you. But it was more about how to change the way I act in uncomfortable situations and to lean into discomfort. And the importance of really listening with an intent to understand, not always to agree, not always to support, but listening to understand. And when I look at what Rodgers has said, and I look at the Packers statement, and I look at the idea of the locking arms, to me that comes back to that listening to understand. Not everyone's going to agree with people kneeling or sitting out or hands in the air during the anthem, but that the point isn't to get everyone to do that. The point is to be able to have the people who are making those actions vocalize, verbalize, share with others their concerns and actually get those heard. And I think the fact that it's the people who are taking it to the unity standpoint and locking arms and actually trying to say, we're not going to be divided. We're not going to let somebody, anybody else, whether it's a president, a fan, an owner, anybody come in and say, one of you is wrong and one of you is right. We're trying to be together. I feel that that shows a teammate standpoint of, I'm trying to listen to my teammate. I'm trying to listen to somebody in my NFL brotherhood or somebody, John Key Public, who's voicing these same concerns to me and trying to understand it and give them that respect of listening to it. And to me, that's incredibly powerful and how we can actually grow as a society. And so it's refreshing to see that from our quarterback. I'm slightly terrified of what's going to happen Thursday night with the asking all the fans to do this, because I didn't know it would be such a hot potato to ask the fans to unify, to try to listen and love one another. But I think the fact that it is and that people have gotten so upset just shows that we're not taking the time to listen. We're just taking the time to say, I don't want to do anything else than I normally do because I view that as disrespectful and I'm not going to listen to your reasoning why. And then the other side going, you're really bad people because you won't let me have this. And so we're just going to keep screaming at each other. And so I'm a little worried when you've got, you know, tens of thousands of really passionate people with probably a beer or two in them, and what might actually happen to the anthem on Thursday night.
You know, to the point of the listening, you know, I think that's something that Aaron Rodgers has pretty much expressed this whole time. You know, I don't know if it goes going back to when Kaepernick first kneeled for the anthem, but, you know, over the previous months, he's talked and discussed many times about how much he's learned from his teammates, you know, from them telling him experiences of things that they've gone through in their lives and how it opened his eyes. And that all goes back to the listening, you know, the listening point that you speak of. So I think he, without a doubt, is somebody that is listening.
And, you know, just going back to the original point, you know, I'm not a fan of, I'm not a fan of kneeling during the national anthem. And the only reason I say that is because I think it sets a precedent for a lot of other things to say, well, I'm going to object to this or I object to this person or that person. I wasn't a fan of that to begin with, but the basis of why Colin Kaepernick did what he did, where he did it and how he did it, I think is very important. There are people who protest daily in the Washington Mall, and we hear nothing of them. We don't know that they're there. There are no photographs taken of them. They don't appear in my face. I don't have to worry about what their message was because I have no idea they even existed. And by doing what he did, Colin Kaepernick put this in the public eye, in a place that wasn't comfortable for people. And therefore, you have a backlash. But the point is, he was seen and he was heard and he was listened to. And sometimes that's how that has to happen in order for an important topic, such as race relations, to take place in America. And I think Aaron did mention that this is not a topic that is comfortable for people because people have very dug-in opinions. I shouldn't say all of them, but many people have very dug-in opinions and don't want to budge on that. And in doing this and having it morphed into a unity-type symbol, I think that you can question it, you can throw a rock at it, you can say, well, maybe you shouldn't have done that, but it did serve to a degree his goal, which was to put this conversation into the public forum And I think Aaron Rodgers hits the nail on the head by saying, we got to have this conversation, and I'm going to step forward and be a leader, not just for this team, but for this community.
Okay.
Right on.
All right. Beat that one. I say we go to this week's Hot Pockets, which he found it.
Come on.
Hot Pockets are a chance for all three of us to go around the horn and give a little speech or a little passionate, I don't know, I've done enough passionate today, but a little, just something that's on our mind that I think is important. And I'll start out once again, and that is going to be with Aaron Charles Rodgers and the number of sacks that are piling up for him. I believe he is now up to 13 sacks in three games. Now, I remember back in 2008 and 2009 when he was making his first starts. And I don't know if you guys remember, early in both those seasons, he was taking sacks left and right. And it was crazy. I mean, and that was kind of who Aaron Rodgers was. He was going to be the, I'm totally not Brett Favre, so I'm totally not going to rush a throw, and I'm not going to throw the interception because that's what Brett Favre did. So I'm going to hang on to the ball, and he used to take sacks. And he was getting hit a lot. I mean, not just the sacks, but he was getting a lot of pounding. And I remember factoring it out and saying, well, if he keeps up at this pace, he's going to end up with 84 sacks in the season, which will completely blow the NFL record. And usually in both those years, about halfway through the season, I think the offensive line gelled a little bit and the sacks went down significantly, or else Rodgers changed his style of play. As of right now, though, he's on pace for 69 sacks, times he'd be sacked this season, which would rank third all-time on the all-time list behind, I believe, Randall Cunningham and first place David Carr of Houston. His own personal record is 51. Now, the Packers are now playing with their top five tackles are out of the game at this point. I mean, the two starters and all three guys who would be backing him up, they're gone. And I'm worried because it's not just the sacks. It's a lot of the hits he's taken. I'm worrying a lot less about how many sacks he has at the end of the season as I am about his ability to actually finish the season. So let's hope the Packers figure that out, because that's my number one concern, and that is my
Hot Pocket.
Nice job there on the Hot Box thing. Okay. You finally got it right. You didn't say Hot Pocket.
Took me a while.
That's wrong. You're not supposed to. Yeah, okay. We're progressing here. So anyway, my Hot Pocket is about Randall Cobb, okay? To me, I guess I have to disagree with Pete, who said he didn't think having Cobb back would make a big difference. I think it's going to help a lot. I think he's one Packer receiver who can get open running quick routes, which is something Rodgers is going to need when we've got Pankey and McCray as our starting tackles. So I think having Cobb back is a big factor for this game. I'm looking for him to catch like 10, 11 passes, have a big day. Nothing deep, you know, all short, quick passes, but move the chain type passes and help the offense get down the field and score a few points. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
Yeah.
Look at us. I like it. So my Hot Pocket this week is, you guys are very specific to the players, but mine is just the importance of how the game starts on Thursday night. You know, in our quest to find an identity with this team, when I think back to the both Atlanta games, we knew that those games were over within moments of them. And it started to feel that way on Sunday against the Bengals, because it just felt like very quickly this game was getting away from the Packers. And so while there wasn't a fast offensive start at the beginning of the Seattle game, having that strong defense at the beginning really helped. And so on Thursday night, what I am looking for is the Packers to be able to come out of the gate and show that they are there on the field, stopping the Bears, that actually, if they can't get a strong offensive start to begin it, at least a strong defensive start, and just not waiting until the second half, because I don't know how much longer with their injuries they're going to be able to kind of grind back or hang around and things. So though, I need a strong start from the defense in particular on Thursday night. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
Excellent.
Nice. All right.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
Well, the 2-1 Green Bay Packers are going to host the 1-2 Chicago Bears in the, I believe, 7 millionth matchup of these two teams over the last 90-something years. Thursday Night Football, primetime game, Tony Romo is going to be announcing. I'm really, really excited. But, you know, amidst all the other Romo-nishness and all of the hand-holding in the stands and everything else that might be a controversy going on, we have to play a game. So who's going to win? I will start out with my prediction, and I will tell you right off the bat, every instinct in me says this game is going to be a loss. They're coming off an emotional victory, and there's a short week, so you got this huge letdown factor and not a lot of time to really recover from it. The injury list is daunting. It's a rival that can just seem to beat us on our home turf during prime time. Nice national embarrassment. Records don't matter when the Packers play the Bears, but I don't think this one is going to go without some blood, sweat, tears, probably some controversy. But even though it goes against everything I'm feeling, I'm actually going to predict a Packer win. And I'm going to say Packers 21, Bears 20. Al?
Okay. Yes, sir. Well, I had similar thoughts and feelings, I have to admit, you know, and if this game wasn't at home and Cobb was out, I think I would actually have had to pick the Bears, which I've probably never done in my life and don't ever even want to come close to doing that again. As it is, I'm going with this game going to be won by the Packers defense and my favorite player, Mason Crosby, hoping for the best, Packers 19. Bears 13.
Favorite player.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie.
You didn't know?
Crosby. He's a lifelong fan. I'm going to, of course, pick the Packers. And I'm going to go 27-23 because I feel that at home we should be able to score more than 19 points. And I'm trying my darnest to be hopeful on this. And what CD mentioned about, you know, the Packers coming off this emotional victory and a short week, the Bears are too. They also went to overtime. They also had, like, the most Bearsian of all Bears plays ever with the end of the half, blocked Pittsburgh field goal, ran it back only to fumble at the one, and then not even get a chance to run that ball in because they false started and then had to kick the field goal. So had they just got into the end zone, they wouldn't have even had to go to overtime. So I feel that they're also in a similar boat. They've also been without an identity. They took Atlanta. They almost beat Atlanta, and then they had this weirdness against Pittsburgh. So I feel like we're the same as them. And since Mike Glennon is not that good, or just at least hasn't been, you know, he's kind of regressed this year from where he was to start with. I'm really hopeful that the Packers will come out of this the victory. I don't feel super confident, which is why I'm only going for a 4-point victory, but I'm picking the Packers.
So you're hopeful.
Trifecta.
I'm hoping for the best, and CD is going against his inner feelings. Okay, lots of confidence here.
We wasted all our positivity earlier in the show.
Yeah, we used it all up, I think.
Yeah. All right. Let's close this one out.
Thank you all so much for joining us on Cheesehead Radio, and a special thanks to Pete Doherty, who also took time out to join us tonight. Make sure to head on over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow @PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like the Packers Talk page on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all of the Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes, and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a review if you can. You can also listen in by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcasting app and search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap. Go Pack Go!
Alright, good night everybody, and thanks for joining us in Cheesehead Radio. Go Pack Go!
Good night all! Go Pack Go!
Good night!
Eat the Bears!
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
You are a mighty fortress of supreme knowledge. Progressive Direct has not only revealed their rates, but those of their competitors. If you were any more in the know, you would be drowning in, you know, the know.
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates, because knowledge is power. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.